We live in an age of so many great time-saving devices, and it's paradoxical that we live in this world of unparalleled convenience and yet seem to have less time than ever for our personal lives. We spend a great deal of time either working for or taking care of these time-saving devices. If you doubt that, when you go home this evening, count up everything in your house that has a motor in it. Right? Dishwashers, dryer, washing machines, just all the things that have motors in them and how much time you have to spend taking care of those things. But time is a precious commodity, even though it fleets away. I'll come back to that thought, because of the pace of business or life around us. But what is time? It's one of those interesting enigmas that if you want to try to pin it down, it's really hard to define on a human level, because it's something we can't touch. We can't really deal with any of our other senses, right? We can't see it, feel it, taste it, hear it, touch it. You know, there's no way to analyze it on that level. We can't stop it. We can capture brief moments of it in photos, videos, but it marches on. In spite of our best efforts to fight the effect, eyesight will dim no matter how much we refuse to admit that it does. Our hair will continue to gray no matter how much coloring are used, or how little of it we have left. Hearing fades no matter how much we insist our mind was somewhere else. And we constantly are reminded of this passing of time because so many of us live by clock, right? By time, measuring time. We have to be at work by a certain time. We have to work a certain number of hours so we can have money to buy all those great time-saving devices or provide for our needs. We have clocks all around us, on our wrists, in our cars, driving down the street, signs along the way, calendars of all kinds, more electronic now than ever, or even our ever-present cell phone, reminding us of what time it is. But all too often, time becomes something cheap. Because we have all these conveniences, we can fritter it away very easily. And oftentimes we'll say, I just don't have enough time. When really, the problem we have is time management, but still. Or we might say, I simply lost track of time. But God is the master of time. And part of what we do coming before him is to consider things like this. But let's be reminded of part of God's nature, if you will, in Isaiah 57. Because he exists on a plane that we, quite honestly, can't really understand. We know that he is spirit, and as such, lives out of time. We'll come to that here shortly. So he's not constrained or limited by it. It doesn't affect him in the way that it affects us. But Isaiah 57 and verse 15, we read here, it says, thus says the high and lofty one, notice, who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, I will dwell in the high and holy place with him who has a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones, to dwell in eternity. That's part of what we picture, as we're reminded of even in the sermonette, through the holy days. Right? We picture a time when we will live in eternity as he does, but for now we don't. And time, again, it's just one of those things that's just really weird. When you're doing things that you don't like, it seems to just drag out forever, doesn't it? And when you're really enjoying something, you turn around once and it's like, how many hours passed? In a flash. And so it doesn't even seem consistent at times. But coming back to this aspect of God's nature, have you ever stopped to consider that as creator of all things, that God created time as well? For instance, there are a couple of interesting sayings. I like collecting thoughts like this to ponder. Time is God's way of keeping everything from happening at once. Because it can't when there's physical time. It's just one of those things. However, before there was time, nothing was late, right? If there wasn't time, we wouldn't be late for anything. And also, in the great cosmic scheme of things, everything is on time. But as I said, time is certainly different for God than it is for us, because he's spirit. He's not limited by those physical things. And we ponder that and can't really wrap our heads around it, because he even measures time differently than we do. We're not going to turn there, but in 2 Peter 3:8, probably most of you are familiar with this verse, where it talks about 1,000 years being as a day to God. I don't even think that's completely accurate. It's just trying to capture the thought of how differently he views time, if you will. And yet, almost paradoxically, time is important to God. Sabbath day, the holy days, the Jubilee, the sacrificial laws, all of that instruction revolves around aspects of time. Particular days, number of hours, whether it's a day or whether it's a week like Feast of Tabernacles, whether it's a year like the Jubilee, whether it's every 70 years, things of this nature. Which means that time is especially important to God when it involves how we worship Him and what He considers to be holy, because that time then becomes sacred. So today that's what I'm going to talk about. Time from God's perspective, specifically sacred time, but even more specifically as it relates to the Sabbath day. And so my sermon title today is simply Sabbath Time. Let's go back and read the verses beginning of Genesis that were alluded to in the sermonette and consider this aspect of time as we see it being created. In Genesis 1 and verse 1, to read it more accurately here, it should be, in beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. To begin this plan of salvation, all that he was going to accomplish, he begins this creation, and the earth was without form and void. It was in a chaotic state. So he's reshaping it here. It says, the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, and it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. Verse 5, God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day, as it was measured that way. God marked time here, specifically a period of the earth revolving once to cycle through a night and daytime portion. If we move down to chapter 2 in verse 1, then after he finished those 6 days of creation, it says, "When he, thus the heavens and the earth and all the hosts in them were finished, on the seventh day God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work which he had done." So even pondering this, what does rest look like to God? He wasn't exhausted. This wasn't taxing to the point where he needed to take a break, but he paused here for a very specific purpose. And so in verse 3, it says, "And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all of his work which God had created and made." So the seventh day was made for a different purpose, time-wise. The word sanctified here means to consecrate, to purify, or to make holy. So God took a specific period of time, 24 hours of time, one day out of seven, and he set it apart. He sanctified the Sabbath day, making that day holy to him. But again, I asked the question just a moment ago, what is time? And technically speaking, time for us humanly, physically, is simply moving through space. We don't tend to think of it that way, but it is, right? And we measure that time. But even if we do nothing, time still passes, doesn't it? Because we're still moving through space. The earth rotates, it cycles the sun, but even the sun is moving within the galaxy. And so we're still involved in this movement through space, and that's what we call time. And so we measure it as hours, even less minutes and seconds. We measure weeks, we measure months, years, and so forth. But that also then begs the question, just because God set that time apart, then why is it holy? Well, again, you can write this down in Exodus 3 and verse 1. We have the classic event, story if you will, of Moses as God began to work with him after he had fled from Egypt. He's shepherding sheep, and as sheep are wont to do, some got lost. They wandered off thinking there's better plants over here, colder water over there, whatever. And Moses sees this burning bush, but it's not being consumed. And so being a good man, he wants to go check this out, right? Fire not burning, got to see. And so he does, and what does God say to him? Take your shoes off. Why? It's holy ground. What made it holy? If Moses was not there, would it have still been holy? In that moment, yes, because God was there. When Moses left and then God left, was that bush still holy? No longer. And this as an aside, this is why we don't worship relics, right? Those things are meaningless when it comes to worshiping God. But nonetheless, something is holy if God lives in us, in it. That was the case with the burning bush. And specifically, it's the case with the Sabbath day. God lives in that day. It says he rested in it and he sanctified it. He's a part of that day like he's not, unlike the other days, I should say, right? He's still creator. He's still sustainer. He still maintains these things, but he's in it differently in that day. And let's look next at Mark 2 to consider some of why this is the case. Mark chapter 2 and in verse 23, Christ was regularly condemned by the Jewish leadership for things they thought he should not be doing on the Sabbath day. And we'll get to that in this message, how to consider the things that we should or should not do in this day. But they had made a checklist. And the problem with checklists is the same problem you have with making policy. Right? So I'm on the Council of Elders. That's one of the things we do, is establish policy. What's the problem with a policy? There's always an exception. But if you make the a policy, then there's no exception. Right? So in Mark 2 and verse 23, Christ tries to explain to them the value of the Sabbath and what they're missing. And he says here, now it happened as he went through the grain fields in the Sabbath, and as they went, the disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. So as a boy, it was a different world back then. In the summertime, my parents never knew where we were, right? Unless we got into trouble. And then they knew before we got home. But we would just go exploring, right? We would check out the creeks. We would turn over the rocks. We'd catch the crawdads. We'd do all kinds of things. Just wander the woods, whatever it happened to be. And sometimes just going through a field, you could stick your hand out, the tall grass as you walk through, and your hand would basically gather all the grass seed in your hand. That's what I picture them doing here. They're just walking along a field, and they happen to just strain this out, if you will. And if you take wheat and you rub it between your hands, you break the husk. If you lightly blow it, all that blows away. You're left with the grain head. And you can just eat it as a snack, which is what they're doing. That was considered work by the Jewish policies of the day, right? Their regulations. You can't do that. And so that's why they say in verse 24, look, why do they do what is not lawful on the Sabbath? What law? Their law, not God's law, their law. So he says to them, have you never read what David did when he was in need and hungry and he rose with those with him? Went to the house of God in the day of Abiathar, the high priest, and ate the showbread. So the showbread was for the priests. Was David a priest? No, he was of the tribe of Judah. He was not to eat this, so how could he eat this? Well, there's a longer discourse there, but the short of it was also the time when they exchanged out the old showbread for the new showbread. Normally the priests would eat that. In this case, Abiathar gave it to David. There's nothing wrong with that. It was not common, but still he makes the point here, Christ does. So what was the problem with this? It was not lawful to eat except for the priests, who also gave some those that were with him. And so he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, right? If man was made for the Sabbath, then there has to be regulations as to how it's used. But they had it backwards. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so it should serve man, not man serve the Sabbath. That's what they're missing here. So then he says, as a conclusion here, therefore the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. And the word Lord here is an interesting word because it literally means to be the controller or the master of it, right? I own it, right? I'm Lord of my house. I'm Lord of my car. I'm Lord of the things I own, right? Because I can control those things. They're mine to control. God gave mankind the Sabbath, but it still is controlled by him, which means he decides, right? It's his to say how it's used. And so then we look at verses like Leviticus 23 as we go through every holy day and we consider those holy days. He tells us how to use them, when to assemble, what to do, what our viewpoint, what we should ponder, if you will, on those days. But let's go next to Exodus 20. As we consider in the commandments, the Ten Commandments, God's instruction through Moses regarding this day, the Sabbath day. And it's interesting to note that this commandment has the most discourse around it. And so in Exodus 20, beginning in verse 8, God says through Moses, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Remember that you need to keep it holy. He continues in verse 9, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. And some have misconstrued this saying you have to work every day, right? You can't rest, which is just a ridiculous position, right? We'll come back to that thought here in a little bit too. Verse 10, he says, but you have 6 days to do those things, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the eternal your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, your male servant, your maid servant, female servant, your cattle, your stranger within your gates, right? Nobody is to do anything. For in 6 days the eternal made the heavens and the earth. We looked at that in Genesis 1. The sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the eternal blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, made it holy. So to go back up to verse 9, where it talks about you shall labor and do all your work, the word work there literally means your occupation, what you do business doing, right? Whatever it is that you do. And so we're to not do those things. So if you remember the account of the man as Israel began their exodus and they began their wanderings, there was a man after Israel's told, do not work on the Sabbath day, that he went out to gather sticks, right? What was the problem with that? Was the problem gathering sticks? The problem was not gathering sticks. The problem was the quantity of sticks he was gathering, right? He was doing more than was necessary. The indication is that he was doing it for work. And that was the problem that God had with it and why he was made to be an example. But I'm speaking to the choir here, aren't I? Those that are listening. We're here on the Sabbath day because we've proven to ourselves this is a day to be kept. I'm not going down that doctrinal path to prove this. We're going to look at some other things as we progress here, because I see at times a tendency to miss some things as we progress because we become comfortable. It's just a human tendency. As we become comfortable, we drift and we get off course if we're not careful. Because when was the last time we collectively and individually sort of took a step back to remind ourselves of what it means to not only keep the Sabbath, but to keep it holy? Is the Sabbath, and by extension, then all of God's holy days, sacred to us, set apart, consecrated for a different purpose? If we continue here in Exodus, moving to chapter 31, Exodus 31 and verse 13, we will begin here. God again here is talking about things regarding the Sabbath that Moses is to speak to the nation. And so he says, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep. Now in the Hebrew, the word there is singular. Surely my Sabbath you shall keep. But the translators understand that he's talking inclusively here, right? The holy days are a Sabbath as well, and the weekly Sabbath. So he said, my Sabbaths you shall keep. Notice why. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Eternal who sanctifies you. Now, oftentimes we think of this sign being to the world. And it can be. But what is the more important aspect of this sign? It's a reminder to us. The reminder to us that we remember that it is God who sanctifies us. That's the sign we need to remember. Verse 14, you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does not, for any who does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Eternal. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. Perpetual means never ending, doesn't it? So when did it end that we now can keep a separate day or not keep a day at all? If that's the case, then God simply lied here, didn't he? But God doesn't lie. We're reminded of that. We have confidence and hope in that. And so he says, it's forever to always do this. Verse 17, it is a sign, notice, between me and the children of Israel, between me and them, me and you, to make it more personal. It is a sign, he says, to be reminded, for in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. I would go so far as to say the primary meaning for the Sabbath day is so that we have our relationship with God. Without that regular connection, it begins to drift. This is also why we read in Hebrews, we're not to forsake the assembly. It's not just that we're commanded to be here. It's why would you not want to be when you're invited to continue in that relationship? By extension, then, if we don't keep the Sabbath day holy, if it's not sacred, then what does it become? Just another day. And for many, that is the case. But let's also notice in Ezekiel 22, part of what we're to understand through all of the things that God asks us to do. Sabbath day, certainly, but everything. But let's consider this in light of the Sabbath day. Ezekiel 22, and in verse 26, God says this through Ezekiel. Her priests, speaking to Israel, have violated my law and profaned my holy things. They profaned the temple, didn't they? By watering down the instruction, they profaned what God intended in the marriage relationship. They profaned even how they brought offerings to him. They didn't bring things of value, things consecrated in the right way. They brought basically leftovers, if they brought anything. They worshiped foreign gods, didn't they? That God was just one other god to appease. And so they had profaned many of these things, but certainly the Sabbath day. They were doing business on the Sabbath day. They had shops set up, markets. They would buy and sell and do these things. And so he says, they've not distinguished these things between the holy and the unholy, nor have they made known the difference between the unclean and clean, and they have hidden their eyes from my Sabbath so that I am profaned among them. By not remembering the sign, by not continuing to see that time as holy, then they made it common, if you will. What does common mean? It's just what you do, right? There's no special meaning. I suspect most of you are this way as well. I have certain clothes that I only wear when I come here, right? These are my work clothes. If I'm doing work at home, though, I don't wear these clothes. I'm going to destroy them, right? I'm going to get paint on them. I'm going to grind stains into them, grass or oil or whatever I'm working on. You know, but I have clothes that I don't care about. Right? I bought them specifically to use them up, right? And this is not a disconnect, if you will, in terms of how God wants us to view these things. Do we respect the time that he's given us today, every week, to come before him? Because again, Israel had lost this point. And human nature being what it is, it's easy to do. Because part of continuing to do the instruction is to be reminded. If we're not reminded, then we begin to come up with our own things and we drift. So how would it be possible to make the Sabbath common? What sort of things might we do? Well, something as simple as doing chores. Going back to Exodus 20, right? We have 6 days to do the things we need to do to take care of us, take care of our things, our families, and so forth. So why would we want to do chores? Maybe we decide, oh, I forgot to run that load of laundry. And so Sabbath morning, it's not going to be a big deal, right? I just throw it in, put the soap in it, start it. I'm not doing anything. The machine is. But we're still thinking about it, aren't we? Because when it ends, if we have the beep on or not, we have to go get the load, put it in the dryer, because we don't want to leave it in there, because then we'd have to wash it again. So then we, you know, this is what's on our mind. Even something as simple as stopping to get gas. Because after all, I mean, if I'm going to get gas and I get a car wash, why would I not run it through the car wash? Because we live in a world of such conveniences, and that's the reason why I started where I did, it can be easy for us to blur the line between holy and common on the Sabbath day if we're not careful. Can we not get the car gassed up? Well, about 15 years ago, when I had four congregations, one of them being Eau Claire, it took me almost 5 hours to drive to Eau Claire. There's no way from my house I can drive to Eau Claire, drive home without getting gas, unless I put a really big gas tank in my car. It just doesn't have enough gallons of gas in it to do it. I would still try to mitigate that. I would make sure I filled up the end of day Friday so I had the fullest tank possible. I could make it to Eau Claire Friday night. We always stayed overnight because it was such a long drive. We did a morning service in Eau Claire, and then we drove an hour and a half to Dells, did services there, drove almost 2 hours home. During the longer days of the year, daylight portion days of the year, I would still have to stop and get gas. I simply could not make it home. In the wintertime, I could get gas on the way home from the Dells. It'd be after dark. But the point is, I still had to do it, didn't I? To fulfill the responsibilities I had been given. We're not talking about that. We're talking about when it's Friday and it's like, oh, I don't feel like stopping. I'll get gas in the morning, sort of thing. Because that word sacred is important, right? It's set aside for a different purpose. It's a gift to us, but it is still God's day, which means it's not ours to decide how we use. We have six other days for that. We could apply this to any other errands. You know, oh, I forgot to pick up my dry cleaning this week. I was busy all week. I'll do it on the way to church. Something as simple as that seems like it's innocuous, but if we find ourselves doing these things on a regular basis, then we're not considering the holiness, are we? What about shopping? I ran out of milk. I need to go. Well, I'm here. I might as well get some bread. I need some eggs. And pretty soon you walk out with a couple bags of stuff, right? Can we just not wait and go do it after sundown or Sunday morning or whatever? I've even known of families who say Friday night is our movie night. What? Yes, that's our time to relax as a family. So we watch a movie. But you're not focused on God, are you? You're watching some action adventure or drama or whatever it happens to be. You're being distracted, right? That's not sacredness. I can watch a movie any day of the week. And I simply highlight these as illustrations to show how easy it can be to sort of compromise. To say, well, it's not a big deal. When it is a big deal. Remember what we read here. God says that if someone profanes my Sabbath, they should be killed. This is how important it is to God, how valuable it is. Because the Sabbath day shows us His holiness. And we'll come back to that thought because it is a really important one as we progress here. But I can't make it holy, but I can prepare to be with God in His holiness. There was even a disconnect within my extended family. This goes back a number of years when my oldest niece got married. And of course she planned the wedding on Sabbath because it was just, they're not thinking about us, you know, right? So they just, that's the day of the week that is sort of convenient for most people. My father told my brother that he would not be there for the wedding. My brother knew he went to church every Saturday, but my dad did say, I will come afterwards and be at the reception. That was not good enough. My brother saw that as a slight, even though he knew this was the thing. But in my dad's mind, he was not going to compromise coming before God to worship Him through a wedding. And unfortunately, it did cause contention the rest of my dad's life with him, which is a really sad thing. But nonetheless, I think my dad was blessed for that. I saw things in his life that he was blessed for. And not just that, you know, the consistency, if you will. But the fact of the matter is, it does come down to sort of us, if you will, deciding. Because I could try to give you a list, but what would it mean, right? It's just my list. Because there are times that we might need to make, if you will, a decision that might not fit the day. For instance, what if suddenly your child gets very, very sick Friday night? You need to take him to the hospital. Would you not take him to the hospital because it's the Sabbath day? So how do you make that distinction? Well, in my family growing up, I liked the principle that my parents taught me. And the principle was, is it an ox in the ditch? So you can go back to the Pentateuch, and we'll even read a verse here in a moment. If you want to turn to Luke 14, we'll get there. But the principle is, if it's an exception, an emergency sort of thing, right? On the Sabbaths that I can gas up, knowing that that will take me through the Sabbath, I try to do that every week. But as I mentioned, when I was traveling to Eau Claire, there were weeks where that simply couldn't be the case, right? That was necessary. It was an exception, if you will, in the responsibilities I had been given. But I can pick up dry cleaning other days, can't I? I can go get groceries other days, can't I? I can watch movies. I can do these other things. We're talking about true emergencies. That's the ox in the ditch principle. The ox fell in the ditch. Well, let's just go there, because that's what Christ talks about in Luke 14. And you have to understand in the context, too, this is not just a random animal. I'll come back to that, but let's read the verse. Luke 14, verse 5. Christ here says to them, which of you, because, let me back up and set the context. Christ had healed a man on the Sabbath day. I would find that ecstatic. If somebody came to me, asked to be anointed, I did the anointing, and this has happened, God heals them in the moment. That sends chills up my neck, right? To see God work that way. And why, especially on the Sabbath, why would you not want to celebrate that? A day of release with someone being released. But they were again chiding him for this. And so then he says in verse 5, which of you, having a donkey or an ox that has fallen in a pit, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? Now you could say, what a stupid animal. I'm going to let him suffer. I'll come back at the end of the day. But a donkey or an ox would be the equivalent of a car to us, right? This is how you got around. This is how you got your goods to market. This is how you worked your fields. This is how you transported things. This was not some small thing, right? And he says, you would go take care of it, wouldn't you? And you go back to the Pentateuch again, and God absolutely gave, if you will, those exemptions. But you can't put the ox in the ditch, right? I want to do this. And so you push him over or you find a reason to go do it. That's not an emergency. So we have to be careful. And that's where it comes down to. We have to pay attention, right? This is part of us being judged. Are we applying God's instruction properly to consider, well, what does make this Sabbath day holy? We even see this again in chapter 13. Across the page or so, depending on your Bible, Luke 13, verse 10. And again, here he's being condemned. And in verse 10, Luke 13, it says, he was teaching in one of the synagogues in the Sabbath, and there was a woman who had a spirit of an infirmity 18 years. She was bent over and could no way raise herself up. But when Jesus saw her, he called her to him, and he said to her, woman, you are loosed from your infirmities. What day is this? Sabbath day, right? He's teaching in the synagogue, right? He's preaching from God's word. He sees this woman probably in great deal of pain, if not just discomfort, but for 18 years. He has mercy on her and he says, you're healed. So he lays his hands on her. Immediately she was made straight. She glorified God. And it'd be a sad thing if she didn't. But if you had an infirmity for 18 years and God suddenly healed you, you would be ecstatic, wouldn't you? But it says, the ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. Why was he upset at that? Because again, this is considered work. Healing is work? You're doing something. They don't see the bigger picture of the relationship with God. So he condemns him here with indignation because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. And so he, the ruler, says to the crowd, there are 6 days on which men should work. I mean, get your mind around this. Are you kidding me? Basically, he's saying, do it another day. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not on the Sabbath day. I come back then to the thought, do our actions reinforce the sacredness of the Sabbath, or do they weaken it, making it as common as the other 6 days? This man thought what Christ did made it common. But again, I can only imagine how she felt after 18 years. That probably made that Sabbath and all other Sabbaths that much more meaningful to her. So again, we could go through a list. Is it okay to go to a park on the Sabbath? Maybe. You know, as long as it's occasional and it doesn't become, you know, sort of a picnic playtime. But I mean, to sit at a park bench and ponder the creation, ponder a message that was given earlier, or to just have some quiet time, that's not wrong. That maybe can even be a highlight of the week, right? Time away from the noise of the world or your neighborhood, depending on where you're living. Shortly after Roxanne and I were married, we moved to California to continue at Ambassador College. Our apartment was not even a block off the freeway. The noise was constant, right? They had walls, but you could still hear the noise. And so to go someplace quiet, I would understand that. I've talked about putting gas in your car, common things like that. So for me, the principle is the things that to do on the Sabbath that are okay either enhance or reinforce the holiness of the day. Right, we have extra Bible study time. We have extra prayer time. We have extra time just to cut the harriedness, the busyness of life. Right? We can have a brunch instead of a breakfast. Right? We can sleep in. We can relax. We can spend time with family. We can call family. We can visit members on the way to church. Things of this nature. But things that cause us to reflect upon God and take on more of his character. I say that because of Leviticus 11. Let's go back there. If God made the Sabbath for us and not the other way around, then what is it we should see in it? What is the value for us? So Leviticus 11, and in verse 44, God speaks, "For I am the eternal your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy." You shall be holy. What makes something holy? God in it. And maybe we don't think of ourselves being holy because we see our shortcomings, we see our weaknesses, we see our stumbles in spite of our good intentions or maybe even good efforts. And we can say, well, I'm not very holy. But if God has his spirit in you, you are. And so we should never give up trying to reflect that. You shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth, for I am the Eternal who brings you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I have brought you out of the world. I have shown you those gods are no gods. I have given you a way of life that will bring blessing. So he says, remember these things. I am your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. God expects this of us. The Sabbath day is a day to help us with that, to be with him in that day, to take on more of that holiness, to be sacred before him, to be marked as sacred. And out of all of the billions of people, and that number just keeps growing, doesn't have lost track, 8 point whatever billion it is now, of the people who live on the face of this planet, he's chosen us. He's chosen you. To be the example that it can be done. And people watch us. I remind people every so often about this. We may think that we're fairly anonymous in our neighborhood or at work or a grocery store or whatever, but people still watch. And they may not know who we are, and they may not know what we believe, but they see what we do. And what example are we giving them? In John 15, 19, Christ said, I've chosen you. He's chosen us, as we've reflected in the fall holy days especially, he's chosen us to be his priests, to be training, to teach mankind when he returns, to be part of that. He's chosen us to be his first fruits, to show that even with everything stacked against us in the world, that it is possible with his spirit in us. Luke 8, there in the middle of that chapter, talks about us being a light on the hill. Right, so we live in a very beautiful environment. That's part of why we purchased the house that we did. There's 42 acres of conservancy behind us to the west. Beautiful sunsets. The nearest neighbor looking west is about 5 miles on the other hill on the other side. When they turn on their back porch light, I can see it in a moment. It's probably a 60 or a 40 watt bulb. It's probably not very bright. But as soon as they turn that switch, I can see it. Are we like that to the world? Especially on the Sabbath day. But let's look at Romans 12, and we'll begin to wrap things up here. In Romans 12, we're reminded that part of the reason, the value, the purpose of the Sabbath day and what God has given us is that we're to come out of the world, as we just read. In Romans 12 and verse 1, Paul says, I beseech you, I'm begging you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Right, I won't use the language, but I really appreciate George Patton's statement in World War II. You do not die for your country. You let the other guy do that. Right? To be a living sacrifice is what God wants for us. He doesn't want us to die learning these things. He wants us to live in them. Right? And there are sacrifices. Right? There are ball games I'm not going to go to. There are dances. You're in high school. This is some of my brothers lament, right? Can't go do sports, can't go do the dances, the activities. Yeah, you're going to give those things up. But I've traveled more than the rest of my family put together, with the exception of my brother Ed. My oldest brother didn't even leave the state of Ohio until he retired. That's just one aspect of it. What about the blessings of health, and the blessings of protection, and the blessings of so many other things? So he says here in verse 2, then do not be conformed to this world. Right? There are sacrifices, but don't be conformed to it. And even that's challenging, isn't it? Because as my grandfather said, any dead fish can go downstream. No effort needed. The challenge is going upstream, isn't it? Going against the culture. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed. And that I love that word because in the Greek, it's the word we get metamorphosis from. And metamorphosis is not just a change. It's completely different. Right? The caterpillar becomes the butterfly. There is nothing in common between those two. Every cell changes. So he says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We have opportunity to do that whenever. We have access to the throne of God through Jesus Christ whenever we need it. But especially on the Sabbath day, do we see the sacredness and the holiness and the opportunity provided in this day to not be conformed, to learn why it's not going to work, why we should follow God's instruction, why that will work, and what will come from it when we do. In Zechariah 8, this was a condemnation again that God gave regularly to that nation because they just failed to grasp what God was asking them to do. And because they couldn't grasp it, they tried to implement their own reasoning, if you will. And that's always a dangerous place to be. I think I said Zechariah, not Zephaniah. Sorry if I did that. So Zechariah 8 and in verse 8. God says, I will bring them back in spite of the rebellion of Israel, in spite of the rebellion of the world around us, in spite of mankind continuing to eat from the tree of knowledge and good and evil. God says, I'll bring them back because that's why he created everything. This planet, and many have put it this way, it's a razor's edge for life to exist on this planet. That's how thin it is, right? A little bit this way, a little bit that way, life could not exist on this planet. And yet God has created this planet especially so mankind can learn to be like him and be in his family. And so this is why we remind ourselves of these things. He says, I'll bring them back and I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. Depending on the messages you got on the eighth day, this happens after that day, right? If you read Revelation 22, New Jerusalem comes down and everything changes, right? You can't have a 1,500-mile cubed city on the face of the planet. It's like a tire out around, right? Which means it doesn't rotate anymore. It says there's no more sun or moon because he's there. You don't need those things. Everything changes. He comes to dwell, which is the meaning of tabernacles, right? He comes to dwell with mankind. And so he says, I'm going to do that. They shall be my people. I will be their God in truth and righteousness. This is the balance of mankind in the last great day. And it will begin with most of mankind beginning in the millennium that we've represented in the Feast of Tabernacles. But this is now for us. We have it. In the Sabbath day, we have it in the holy days. God can already dwell with us. We are already his people, and he is already our God. Do we remember that? So let's conclude in Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58 and verse 13. God starts in this chapter of reminding Israel what fasting was supposed to be for. They had made it a badge of righteousness, but they were essentially just doing without food, thinking that obligated God to do other things. But he comes here to the Sabbath as well at the end of this chapter. So Isaiah 58 and verse 13, he says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, meaning their foot was on the Sabbath, right? How is their foot on the Sabbath? They were trampling on what God said was appropriate for their own purposes. Because he says, if you turn away from the Sabbath, for your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day. So God is not opposed to us feeling good, having joy, doing fun things. But on the Sabbath day, that should reflect him, whatever that is, right? To do his pleasure, not our pleasure. And call the Sabbath a delight, to even look forward to it. And it may sound odd because of my responsibility, but the Sabbath is even different for me. Right? I'm doing work in the week leading up to this. I'm sending out prayer requests. I'm creating or writing a Sabbath thought to help sort of start the day, the evening right. I'm preparing a message, Bible study or whatever, there's work that's involved. But this day is still different even for me. I try to not do the things that I do that I can do in the week, even for my responsibility for today. I try to not do that on the Sabbath. So I'm not writing a message Saturday morning. I hope it doesn't come across that I have. I try to put some thought into it. I've mentioned the gas, some of these basic things. I try not to do things on the Sabbath that I can do the other day, even for my responsibility when I'm here on the Sabbath day, because I want to call it a delight. Being with God's people, being before him, hearing the messages, learning of these things, being reminded of these things, to be able to call it a delight. He says the holy day of the eternal is honorable. His day is holy. And shall honor him, not doing your own way, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, because those things don't work. Right? We read, I think it's in the Proverbs that says it's not in man to guide himself. Right? This is why the world has the problems it does. This is why we rehearse the plan of salvation that we do, because it takes a mind that is filled with God to understand these things and to know what needs to change. God has given us the Sabbath then to help teach us how to be holy, as we read in Leviticus, to be holy like him, to be able to be in his family. And it's holy time because he lives in it, We can be there with him if we do the same. In the Sabbath day, he seeks for us to be reminded that we are to be a holy people as well. So let's remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy.